Hey, we're just about to jump into the episode, but before we do, did you know we have a junior-friendly Discord community? It's completely free to join. If you want to join us, the link is in the description. We'd love to have you. All right, enjoy the episode. All right, welcome back to podcast episode where we're going to be diving into software engineer and test. So a lot of people can they might hear traditional software engineering paths like front end and back end, especially when I talk a lot about web development. But there is a position that's essentially where software engineers will focus a little bit more on building automation testing that not a lot of people hear about. I actually have a friend in that used to be a software engineer in tests, and he loved it. He talked a lot about it, much more knowledgeable and much better at writing tests than I was. So I learned quite a bit from him. But yeah, we're going to be diving into it. We're going to talk about, you know, what's it like, what's the day-to-day like, and how do you get into it? So I invited on a software engineer in test, has quite a bit of experience in it. James, thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me, Don.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to this episode. So let's kind of do just a little bit of an intro. Who are you? What are you doing right now?
So I've been working as an SDET for the last 6 years. The first 4 years of experience that I had was writing automated tests using Java and Selenium, which is historically Selenium has kind of been the king of the automated testing frameworks. And it has libraries in all the big languages, Java, C Sharp, you know, all the big ones. You could even use Selenium with like JavaScript, though JavaScript has a lot of its own automated testing frameworks. In the last couple of years, I've migrated over to using Cypress, which is a JavaScript framework. It really wasn't on purpose. One of my clients that had hired me to write Java Selenium, they decided at the last minute to use Cypress. So I just started that it was a year contract, and I started that contract learning Cypress, and I really enjoyed it. So yeah, the last 6 years I've been all doing automated testing, and it's been fun.
Okay. I'm glad it's fun. I hate when people get stuck into things they don't enjoy. So what's it like? What makes it fun? What's your day-to-day like?
Yeah, it's people ask me what I do, and I usually just say I'm a software developer because people don't understand the difference, right? If I run into an actual software developer, then, I'm an SDET, and they're like, oh, okay. It's kind of like a watered-down software developer. You can get into it a lot of different ways. I went directly from a coding boot camp into an SDET role, but it's very common to go from a manual tester role into an SDET role and pick up automated testing that way. And I've trained, when working with different clients, I've trained a number of manual testers to become SDETs. It's very common. The day-to-day is kind of like everything
else. Actually, before you jump into that, manual testers, is that like a QA position or is there an official title for it?
Sure. Just kind of the industry jargon us SDETs would use. A manual tester is someone who doesn't write automated testing code and just tests manually, logs in, types in the stuff all manually, clicks, make sure that all of that operates. If they're doing API testing, they'd copy and paste code and do something like Appium. Sorry, excuse me, not Appium, but something like Postman.
Generally, what would those titles look like?
QA tester, you'll see a lot of roles like QA tester or even manual tester. 6 years ago, manual tester, at least I saw that role a lot more common. QA tester, I see very commonly nowadays. And in the testing world, the jargon can get somewhat confusing because there are there's manual testers, QA testers, and then there's automated QA, and then there's SDETs. And most organizations kind of use them interchangeably, automated QA and SDETs, and some insist on not using them interchangeably. So kind of the general definition, you would say an automated QA is a tester that writes automated tests. And generally speaking, an SDET, a software development engineer and tests, is kind of the guy who writes the framework and provides automated tools for the automated QA to write his automated tests, almost like a test architect role.
Okay.
And so, like I said, those are kind of the buzzwords for the different roles. In my contracts, that I've done a little bit of all of it in my contracts, and I've been called all of them.
Okay. Good to know.
You'll see automated QA and you'll see SDET often used interchangeably to make a long answer short.
Yeah. And I think that just kind of gives people a little bit more of searchable terms when they want to look up YouTubers that hold those positions and do that kind of stuff. And
sure.
What's your day to day like?
Like anybody else, usually it starts at least sometime early in the morning with your stand up. Hey, what did I do yesterday? What am I doing today? Any blockers? And you'll have your normal scrum meetings, you know, during your backlog grooming. You'll define what storage you're going to be doing. And when you're sprint planning, you'll assign yourself different stories. So during the day, I'll log into my computer. I'll look at what stories I have to automate, and I'll start writing automation. And obviously, a lot can go into that because when you're writing automation, and as you know, a general sprint is 2 weeks. Most companies use Agile nowadays, and most of them run on 2 week cycles. I've had some run on a week cycle, and I've had some run on a month cycle. But generally speaking, you're on a 2 week cycle. And there can be lots of conversations about when you write your automated tests, because the developers are developing during that 2 week cycle and you're writing your automated tests. So you're doing it concurrently and with the knowledge that usually you will finish your automated test before the developers finish developing. So you're with the understanding that your automated test, when you finish writing, is going to fail. And this is how it's supposed to go. You'll write your automated test, it fails, and the developers, they finish developing, so your automated test passes.
That can almost get frustrating. Well, I could see that getting frustrating if the requirements aren't well established in the beginning.
A well-run team, a well-defined process can alleviate a lot of the stress. And I've worked for clients that don't have well-defined processes, and I didn't work for them for long. And I've worked for clients that had well-defined processes, and I was sad to go because that makes a lot of difference. And yeah, it's always, I had a recent client similarly there. They wanted to amp up their automated testing processes because, you know, once you start getting a lot of, or your application becomes starts to become a lot more mature and you start to have a lot more tests building up, your release process can really become a bear. And you're spending 50 plus hours manually testing stuff. You're pulling in the developers to manually test stuff. You're pulling product people to manually test stuff because you don't have enough manual testers, to manually test everything for the release. And so people realize, oh, if we could just press a button and run all these automated tests and it would do it for us while we're sleeping, that would be great. And so they bring in guys like us to write the automated tests. And they usually do it after the application is already mature. That's just how it is. Everyone always waits to start QA, but so they bring you in, you start writing the automated tests. And we had the client, I had a previous client, a recent client, who wanted to do this to improve their automated testing process. But when I sat down with them and said, this is what the changes that you have to make in order to have, you know, an effective automated testing process, they weren't ready to make those type of changes. So that contract quickly ended.
Okay.
They're like, whoa, like we didn't realize that it was like this big of a change. And it can be for those organizations that don't have their process in place.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, I've been at different companies that have definitely prioritized automated testing and some have not prioritized it. And sometimes it's a little bit more relying on developers writing a lot of automation testing. And sometimes it's not. I would say in my experience, I've worked at three developer companies. It was essentially on QA to write a lot of the automated tests for, well, one company, QA did it. Second company, just manual testing. QA was definitely frustrated. I think they wanted a little bit more room to be able to build automated tests.
Sure.
And then another company was essentially the developers wrote all the automated testing. I didn't spend a whole lot of time with Cypress because of essentially a lot of the features that they wanted to get out and how quickly they wanted to get it out. And that's another thing. That's also, first of all, I appreciate people like you. I appreciate QA. Thanks. Because I can tell you, I've been on like almost all my teams. I've definitely had a lot of pressure. That like deadlines are definitely something that developers feel tons of pressure with. And then a lot of times you can really test the process of a company. When you do get a new client, it needs to get done at a certain date. And then you essentially watch your entire process get executed. And a lot of times everyone's overbooked and quite frankly, testing, it doesn't go out the window completely, but sometimes it's looked over and it causes way more issues in the long run.
Yeah. It's kind of like the forgotten stepchild of the development process. Like everyone wants one day someone's going to have like an automated test suite that's like AI driven, and it can be effectively run by manual testers, and whoever ends up designing that's going to make Buco bucks, and I want to work for them.
Okay. But that's an idea.
When there's a number of companies out there that are trying it. I just haven't seen, I haven't seen the solution yet. They all have their shortcomings still, but one day, like I said, someone's going to have the golden ticket. And when that happens, guys like us will disappear.
Okay.
Because it's like I said, testing is just not giving, generally speaking, testing is not given as much importance in the development process as actual development is.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I've just worked in the startup world. I wonder if larger companies do have that issue as well. Do you think you'll see more software engineer test positions at like much larger companies, mid-sized companies, startups?
I've seen lots of SDET positions. Like I said, once companies, the smart ones, when they start up, they want to integrate the QA process right away. So that's good. But you see lots of mid-size and larger organizations trying to play the catch-up game. And that's where you often run into issues between testing and development, because testing hasn't been par the course from day one. And so development kind of feels like they have more being foisted upon them, like, oh, now we got to make sure that these random dudes who have no real code and experience, like think our code is okay. And like, it can create some tension. Even though in Agile, you're supposed to, it's all part of the development process. You know, you're all part of the development team, but it still can create tension. Oftentimes in those situations, it's hard to get buy-in from the development team. And I've seen that stop automated testing, you know, at different clients I've been at.
Okay. Well, I guess we can kind of dive into getting into automated testing. And I want to start with this question. What could aspiring people do to make sure that the company does take testing seriously? Are there any questions they can ask in the interview? Do they, how could they figure that out?
What I always ask about is their process. Like, what's your testing process like? And I'll dive into it, you know, like, you know, how many automated QA do you have versus developers? You know, is it like you have 9 developers, so 1 automated QA or 1 QA tester? Like what's your release cycle like? You know, what is your CI/CD platform? You know, how often are you, you're running your regression tests, et cetera, et cetera. And oftentimes, are you using all your regression tests as part of your release, you know? I'll ask those process questions because I want to see if they have a well-defined testing process. And oftentimes they don't, but oftentimes companies that don't realize that, and they're like, that's why we're hiring you guys. Like, we want your input when we want to improve our process.
Okay. What can you go over the different types of tests that are run and written?
Sure. So you have, most people know unit tests, from development. Developers write through unit tests. And React, at least, has a very full-fledged unit testing suite where they can kind of write pseudo-automated tests. And I had a client who was going to try writing, because then your next kind of level you step up to is unit automated tests. For example, say you have a story in Jira, because Jira is a very popular content management system. You have a story in something like Jira that says, we're creating the login page. So you're going to have this login widget here on the page, and it's going to say username, it's going to say password. You'll click in the box, enter username and password. When you hit login, it will take you to the homepage. And so you would kind of your unit level tests, you would write like, is this widget, can we navigate successfully to this login page? Is the widget there? Does it exist? Does it say login? Does it say password? Does the login box and the password box exist? If we click on that, can we enter our username? Can we enter our password? Can we, you're testing each of the units that the developers have written in their code and making sure that they're there and they operate properly. And then you kind of have functional tests, or what's often called end-to-end tests, that I like to call them user story tests. They kind of mimic a user as they're trying to use the application. That just, it's not so much testing each individual unit on the page, but kind of how the function of the application works. So like, I'm going to navigate to this page, enter my user password, hit login, and make sure that I'm on the right page. Like, it's not hitting every single unit on the page. And so those are often given higher priority with things like releases. Like, if I run these in prod and these tests mimic kind of like an end user, one of our clients that's going to be using this application, will they find anything that breaks? And they're all important types of tests. They have different purposes, different uses, I guess you would say.
Okay, I appreciate that.
And so, and oftentimes something like unit tests, the developers would think like, well, I unit test my own stuff. Like, yeah, but you don't unit test it when it's all put together, like on the page. And React's testing suite supposedly is able to do that to a better extent. I haven't seen it done yet, so I really can't comment on it. But
okay.
And you have lots of different types of other tests. You talk about black box testing, white box testing, like black box testing, like you can control the, like you have, you don't know what the inputs are going in, but you're expecting a certain type of output. And white box testing, you have control of the inputs. And these are common tests that both automated testers and manual testers would do. And then if you're moving on to like types of testing, so we talked about types of test, but there's also types of testing where you could discuss, like, for example, most of my testing is on the UI, like I mostly a UI automated tester where I test the website. And there's API testing, where you'll be testing the API. And then you have mobile testing, and you have performance testing, and you have security testing. So there's lots of different types of testing that you can get into using automation as well as manual testing.
Love that. Definitely a lot of options. I never heard about the black box and white box testing.
And they're just common. You'll see them a lot on like applications. And if you take like the ASTQB or the ISTQB, if you're international,
what are those exactly?
The American Software Testing, ASD, Testing Qualifications Board, I think is what it stands for. So an organization, you can take their tests kind of like as a, hey, I passed like the entry level ASTQB test. So I understand, like it's kind of just an entry level certification for testing. ASTQB is a testing certification company. And some organizations place more importance on that than others do. I've never worked for an organization that required any of those.
So but would you advise international people that are trying to get into the United States or work in the United States to take that?
You know, I worked for a company. They would farm us out to different clients to do automated testing. And we had to have at least the entry level ASTQB test passed. And that was just kind of so they could put it on their website. All of our testers are ASTQB certified. It has value in my mind, at least, and maybe other people would disagree, but in my mind, it has value in the fact that you learn some of the common industry jargon when it comes to testing, like black box and white box testing. None of my clients have ever asked for me to perform black box and white box testing. Like it's just kind of part of the testing that you do in automation, part of your unit testing, part of your functional testing, part of just, it becomes part of it. You never really use the terms white box and black box on the job site, to use air quotes. But those terms do exist in the industry, and you will sometimes see them on job applications. You know, has experience with white box testing and black box testing.
Okay.
So it has its value in that way. It kind of helps you learn some of the jargon. But like I said, I've never really used it aside from that. I don't even think it's listed on my resume.
Do you think it's relevant for people that live within the United States or any certifications?
I have seen its relevance with manual testers. For some reason, I've had a number of manual, this company I worked at, there were lots of manual testers, and their clients seemed to like that they had a lot of manual testing certifications. So I have seen that a little bit, those requirements a little more heavily involved on the manual testing side, whereas on the automation testing side, they're more worried about your ability to write automated code.
Got it.
Because on the manual side, that sort of stuff really helps with the process of testing. Like we want to make sure that they know how to go in and properly test a website manually.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. A lot of things that I definitely didn't know. It almost sounds like it's automated testing sounds actually fairly accessible at the entry level. You had mentioned that you probably see like a lot of manual QA testers that will move into automated testing.
It's true. The development chops needed to do automated testing is not as extensive as a developer. It's just not. I'm not as good at coding as a developer is. All my clients know it. I tell my clients when they hire me. And there's been jobs that I don't get because they know that I'm not as good a coder as a developer is. And this always seems weird to me, but when I'm interviewing and they say something like, we're really just looking for a developer that loves testing and wants to, and I'm like, well, if he's a developer, why would he take a pay cut and become a tester? Like it always didn't make, it never made any sense to me.
So it, I don't think I'm up for a testing position, but they want to develop. Oh, wow.
And okay. It's usually, it comes from the business side of people who really don't understand the difference. If a dude is a really good developer, like he's going to be paid to be a really good developer. Like he's going to stay as a developer. He's not going to take like a step down in his career path and become an automated tester. And there are positions where, like test architect, for example, if you're going for a large, you know, I worked at, Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield, one of my clients, we had like 20 SDETs, and a massive test framework, over 2000 regression tests. And so our test architects, they really knew their stuff. You know, they had some really serious development chops, and for that kind of position, they needed it. And so it was a really massive behemoth of a framework and for a really large organization. And yeah, they were quote unquote SDETs, but in those type of situations, they're basically developers.
Okay.
But your general SDET, yeah, you kind of have your manual QA, and then you can step up into automation, which you need to learn some code to do. And then it's common.
What's like some code? Like to what extent?
Sure. So my first 4 years is Java Selenium. I'm decent with Java. You know, I can do anything I need to with Java, but I've never like developed applications for my clients in Java. I've never worked as a Java developer. If you have a really strong grasp of core Java, you can work effectively as an SDET doing Java Selenium. Like you're writing Java Selenium. I mean, obviously, the more you know, the better. Understanding object-oriented programming, you'd be better at designing, you know, frameworks and tests and stuff. However, like just if you're new into automation, and this is how we would teach new assets. If you're new into automation, you can effectively knock out automated tests in Java Selenium just having a strong understanding of core Java.
Wow. Okay. Go ahead.
You know, that's pre object-oriented programming.
Okay.
So, you know, if statements, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And we would, and this is how I would commonly train new SDETs. We had the company I worked through, we had a program where we would hire people without development skills. And we would teach them, Java and Selenium over the course of 3 months. And by the end, they would have to graduate taking what we call the SDET test, where they would write their own framework, Java Selenium framework, and they would have to test a website with it. We'd give them criteria that they'd have to test. It was actually quite a difficult test, and they had a week to do it. Most people finished in 3 or 4 days, but they had 5 days. And so it was actually a really good program. I really enjoyed being involved with it. I would usually teach them all the core Java portions and the Selenium portions. And other people would teach them. You would have manual testers teaching them testing processes. Some of the developer guys would teach them like CI/CD platform stuff. And, but it was a cool program. And when you learn core Java to that extent, you can't help but pick up the basics of object-oriented programming. But like they didn't get heavily into it, like designing like web applications.
So that definitely gives me a picture for the Java track. If someone was very comfortable with JavaScript, what would they probably have to learn to be able to get an automated position with that?
If you're comfortable with JavaScript, picking up a language like Cypress, super easy. Cypress itself is a super easy language to test with. JavaScript itself has a lot of different testing libraries, things like Mocha and Chai. And there's handfuls of them out there. Cypress, it's a really well-designed testing library. At least I think it's very lightweight, very easy to approach. Documentation is excellent, and it's all written in JavaScript. So if you're good with JavaScript, you won't have any problems picking up Cypress. I could take a guy who's good with JavaScript, and in a day, he'd be writing automated Cypress tests.
So it sounds like Java and potentially JavaScript are pretty good languages to learn for automated testing. Can you think of any others that are competitive?
You know, when it comes to something like Selenium, any of the big languages have libraries in Selenium. So I see lots of C#, for example, C#, Selenium, lots of Python testing. I shouldn't say lots. You'll see Python used a lot with API testing and some database testing, because Python's used a lot with big data. So you see more like database and API testing with Python. Not as much front-end testing using Python, though I have seen a few roles. You know, things with obviously Java and JavaScript would do mobile testing as well for Android apps, and then Swift if you want to get into Apple products, you know, testing mobile app applications. But yeah, the two, for me at least, I went to a coding boot camp and I learned Java. And I really wasn't aware that SDETs, you know, at the time, I just knew that I didn't know anything. And I had applied, just applying for jobs, and I got hired at a place where their main bread and butter was automated testing. And so that's what I started doing. And so that's really what started my career path into automated testing.
Interesting. Well,
so we had, depending your language, it's not so much the language, it's more like the framework that you're looking at learning. Selenium, like I said, has been king for many years. And all of the big languages have Selenium libraries. But Cypress is really coming up really fast. It's becoming very popular.
We use Cypress at my last company I worked at.
It's cool. I really enjoy it.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to be honest. I did not. But I also don't enjoy writing tons of automated testing. If I got into that, I think I heard a lot of good things about Cypress. And I even heard other developers on the team that did seem to enjoy it. Actually, old boss of mine talked really highly of it. So,
yeah, you know, the Selenium has its shortcomings. It has really heavy overhead. You know, when you're working with a Selenium project, you get a dude called the architect, and his job is just to keep the lights on, just to keep the framework running. You got a lot of a big heavy framework. They usually use a page object model. It has a lot of overhead. Cypress doesn't. It's very lightweight. It's very fast. And especially when Cypress first came out, there was things you could do in Selenium that you couldn't do in Cypress, because Selenium is native in the browser. It runs in native JavaScript in the browser. Very fast, very lightweight. Cypress is native in the browser, whereas Selenium, in my mind at least, more mimics a user testing with it, because you can kind of force things using Selenium, because you're kind of coming from the outside in using a language like Java or C#, where you can use Selenium to kind of force the browser to do things that you can't with Cypress. I should say that you couldn't. Cypress has made a lot of changes, and they're constantly updating and improving it. So lots of the things that you couldn't do when I started using Cypress, you can do now.
That was super helpful. That was very helpful. And I think a lot of people are going to appreciate that. Just even trying to understand different technologies, once we start getting into these alternative positions to traditional software engineering, there aren't a lot of courses. There aren't a lot of people that are willing to create content and like talk about this in depth.
You know, I'm learning Cypress was easy for me to pick up. I never was awesome at JavaScript, and most of the JavaScript I know has come from learning Cypress. And I realized that's a shortcoming of mine. So I've been taking, I've been putting myself in my free time through this JavaScript course that I found to be excellent. LearnJavaScript.online. It's an amazing, very well designed. It costs like $100 for the entire thing, but amazing JavaScript course. And if you know JavaScript, like, you won't have any problems with Cypress.
Okay.
So if you want to get into Cypress testing, learn JavaScript. If you want to get into Selenium testing, learn something like Java or C#, because those are the two most popular Selenium libraries.
That's good to know. Damn. Yeah, that's really good to know. And it sounds like, you know, so you mentioned you went from a coding bootcamp, you got the job. It sounds like it is pretty accessible to the entry level. Why'd you decide not to do traditional software engineering?
You know, it really wasn't like I am doing SDET work and I'm not doing traditional software engineering. It was just, I was looking for a job, and that was the first good one that was offered to me. When I graduated college, I graduated the month the financial crisis started. And, you know, through years of unemployment and underemployment, I ran across coding boot camps. And where I was living, I just entered into Google coding boot camps near me. And there was one that had just opened, and it was called the Software Guild. And this was, you know, 6+ years ago. At the time, I had an excellent experience with them. I have no idea if they've changed or what's changed, but I had an excellent experience. I thought they were very well organized. Went through the 3-month experience with them, and then got a job working there. having not been in the software world before, and going through the boot camp, I just realized that there was so much that I didn't know. And so I had applied to some organizations, got one job offer that I just didn't feel comfortable about, kept looking. And 3 months after graduating from the boot camp, I got a job offer where I ended up moving to Nebraska and working as an SDET. And it was great. Like I had no complaints about it. And there was about seven of us in that first cohort. And we all got jobs working as, I was an SDET. Many of them worked, as junior developers. One guy was a salesman. And so he was just taking it to kind of increase his knowledge and kind of make himself a better salesman. But all the other six of us got jobs in the software world, either as SDETs or developers. And so, like I said, I just went down the SDET path, and yeah, it's fit me to a T so far.
Yeah, you haven't switched out of it.
I haven't. I realize that the option is there, and it's something I considered. Said I've seen lots of QA, manual QA. So also, if you're kind of like, I'm not sure if I, it's a lot of work to become a developer. There's a lot of work involved, and it's hard. And I won't lie, it's not as hard to become an SDET. It doesn't take quite as much development chops. If you want to be really at the top of your game as an SDET, like test architect level, you got to get up there. So hence why I'm putting myself through that JavaScript course. I realized like one of the things like those guys have that I don't is really good JavaScript knowledge. So I'm working on fixing that. But you can start, like, hey, I can, if you want to learn Java, go to programmingbydoing.com. It's completely free. Teach you core Java. You can buy his book after that to learn object-oriented Java. The best resource out there to learn Java. And then you can get a job as a manual tester, start working Java Selenium, however you want, or you could learn JavaScript and go the Cypress route.
I appreciate the recommendations for learning resources too. That's something a lot of people struggle with.
I've trained a lot of SDETs in Java, and that's always what I've used, Programming by Doing. He's got some great projects, and so I would run people through all of his basic skills, like this, take these 20 different little projects that you have to do to learn for loops, and then learn do whiles, and then learn if statements, et cetera, et cetera. And then he's got projects. You can take those and apply into projects. It's very well done.
Okay.
And so, like I said, I highly recommend it. That's how I learned Java, and that's how I taught all of my students, using air quotes here, to learn Java. And I haven't really found a better way to learn basic Java. The books that I've looked at really jump into object-oriented programming too fast. Before, I found that my students had a grasp of the basics. And I enjoy that he really walks you through and really hammers the basics of core Java before he gives you the opportunity to buy his object-oriented programming book.
Okay. Think about the actual position, software engineer and test. Who would even like that type of position?
Who would like it? Lots of people are interested in software development because... I can tell you why I love the career. Low barriers to entry, high pay, high demand, great work-life balance. I mean, most of us work from home. So I'm a contractor. I usually work for someone for 6 months to a year. And I usually never have any problems finding another contract after that. So the demand is high and the pay is good. And so it's an attractive field. However, it can seem intimidating to jump right into software development. And there's nothing wrong with jumping right into software development. If you want to do that, more power to you. I think that's great. But oftentimes it can be very intimidating. It's kind of getting in through the testing route can kind of be more of a way to like test out the waters, you could say, before jumping into something like development full-fledged. You could even start out as a manual tester, you know, study for something like the ASTQB entry level, apply, find yourself a manual testing position. And if you show interest in automation, lots of organizations will train you as an automated tester. Get a few years under your belt of automated testing, and you can just naturally pick up development that way. It's a natural leap doing something like manual testing to SDET and then SDET to developer. Kind of like an easy way to progress your skills.
I like it. So I'm a big, first of all, I always have a problem when coding bootcamps will give this statistic, because 99% of people that go into a coding bootcamp, they want a software engineering position. They want a traditional development position. And they give this statistic, 80, 90% of people landing a job right after a coding bootcamp. And the problem is a portion of that, maybe like 10 to 15% even, are non-traditional software engineering positions, like software engineer and test. And kind of like maybe developer advocate roles. And there are a couple of others that I see are just like tech positions in general. So The problem I have with coding bootcamps is they sell the statistic when they know 99% of people are aiming for software engineers. But I wish coding bootcamps could just be a little bit more transparent and open and just say, hey, all these people some of these people are also getting these other tech roles that are high paying. It's like most people just want a career transition, right? And they find what they love. So I'm kind of conflicted. I like that coding bootcamps are pushing people into different roles like testing. I just wish they were more transparent about it.
Yeah, first, I completely agree. And I'd throw out there as well, there's other roles as well. Let's say, I've worked with some older people. Who are great coders, don't get me wrong, but I've worked with a lot more older people who weren't and really just didn't have the chops to do it. I say, you know what? You'd make a great manual tester. You'd make a great PO, a product owner. You'd make a great scrum master. Like, you'd make a great BA or business analyst. Like, there's lots of business roles as well that support technology that are needed on scrum teams. And you can get really good paying jobs doing those roles. As well with coding bootcamps, yeah, you just got to understand that's how they roll. When I talked with the Software Guild, I was like, tell me the real numbers. And they were like, yeah, these are them. And they were like, you're actually going to make this much, between 40 and 60. And they actually did 99%, 95 or 98% of people who graduated do get a job in the tech field somewhere. And I think I remember them saying, not all are software developers, but that's... it's marketing, right? And they all market. They all use that. And starting at 90,000, which is complete BS, unless you're living in California, which you can barely live on 90,000.
Right, exactly.
But most of it's BS. And like, the numbers are inflated because they're including the cost of benefits and stuff like that for, the coding bootcamp. Like, well, the entire package is worth like 90,000. Like, yeah, but that's misleading. If you go into it understanding that, and I just ask, like, yeah, cut through the BS, like, what's my actual starting salary going to be? And they just straight up told me it'll be between 40 and 60,000, depending on where you are in the country.
Okay.
Excellent. And when it comes to coding boot camps, there's a lot of bad ones out there.
Yeah.
You really got to do your research. And I just happened to hit a good one. When I went, I thought they were great. But do your research. Make sure that you're not being taught by students who graduated from the last cohort. You want your instructors to have, 5 or 10 years of industry experience. You want to make sure that they have a hiring manager. That was the best part of the bootcamp that I found. When I graduated, Knight, David, or I can't remember his first name. And his job was to help us find a job. Everybody says, the old saying, it's a full-time job, finding a job. Finding a job is a full-time job. And he taught us how to find jobs. Like, he sat down with you, went over your resume, made sure it was excellent. Then he sat down with you, like, you're going to apply to at least two, new jobs every single day. And this is what an application actually looks like. You have to call somebody up, talk with them over the phone. Just sending out your resume doesn't count. And he would follow us up with us a couple of times during the week. He'd call us randomly, like, hey, I found this great job. Like, you need to apply. And I talked with a recruiter there. He's expecting your call. And like, would send it out and rode us really hard until we got a job. Like, and he was excellent. And that was my favorite service that the coding bootcamp provided, was that job placement through, I think his name was David Knight. I can't remember. He set up like a speed dating, kind of like round table speed dating, where he pulled in like 20 companies from the area and had all these little tables. And we would spend like 5 minutes, and then we would rotate to each table. We spent like an hour or a couple hours in there, talk with each organization for like 5 minutes, and we would give them our resume. And a couple of guys from our cohort got hired from that. And so that was really cool. So you want to look for services like that the coding bootcamp offers. Like, don't just go to some crappy coding bootcamp, because there's a lot of them out there nowadays.
Yep. Yep. And they continue to flood the market, quite frankly, with people that probably wouldn't even qualify for software engineering tests. There are a lot of very bad boot camps out there.
Yeah. I wasn't an amazing coder when I came out of the boot camp, but I quickly learned. Our instructor went to MIT, and we asked her, like, how does it compare? She's like, I do the theory a lot better than you guys. She's like, but you guys can code better than I could when I graduated.
Hmm. Okay. So,
and some of the guys coming out of the boot camp were really good. I just thought I was kind of middle of the pack, but
that's fair. I kind of thought I was middle of the pack as well. I ended up getting a position pretty quickly.
Yeah, I got a job. Honestly, I think it would have been harder for me as a developer than it was as a software developer, as an SDET, you know, an engineering test. And so I'm glad where I landed. And now that I've been doing it for so long, the thought comes like, maybe I want to step up into development, start filling some of these gaps, like my JavaScript knowledge, you know.
I like it. Maybe you end up getting that architect position, but...
Maybe. And so it's like I said, it's almost kind of like a soft entry into the development world. Understandably, your pay is a little bit lower, kind of like if you're looking at like pay tiers, where developers would be at the top of the tier, the next step down would be like an SDET, and then the next step down would be a manual tester or a QA. Okay. All of them pay decently, don't get me wrong, but you're going to make more money doing automated testing than manual testing, and you're going to make more money doing development than you would automated testing.
I mean, that's good to know. It's realistic. And I mean, like I said, most people are just trying to get paid a little bit more. A lot of people getting into tech that are in non-tech positions, usually they're bumping up their salary.
You know, it's not that you get paid bad. I've more than doubled my salary over the course of 6 years from when I started. And it's not me. That's just what the market's like. So get in somewhere, get started. And if it's as a manual tester, that's great. It's a good role. It'll really teach you the ins and outs of the software world. You'll be part of a Scrum team. You'll learn all the Scrum practices. You know, you'll learn process, which is really important. And you'll learn how to test an application manually. And then when you start doing SDET work, it'll just kind of come naturally. You just have to pick up some coding.
Okay. I like it. I feel like we went over quite a bit. I do appreciate, I mean, even just going over the different stacks, the technologies, and you're clearly pretty knowledgeable around just testing in general and just different pathways into it and what it could extend to.
I've had a unique experience of training lots of people from zero to hero, you know, getting into testing. So
that's where it comes from. I like it. I mean, this is all really good stuff. Before, I just want to, you know, be cautious of your time. Before we wrap it up, is there anything else you want to add?
Yeah, not really. A plug for SDET work. I enjoy it. I think it's a great realm. Like I said, one day someone will come up with that AI tool that replaces us, but I don't think it's going to be anytime soon.
Well, okay, let me challenge you with this. I mean, a lot of software engineers are deathly afraid of no code and low code movement, right? It's progressing. I mean, quite frankly, like, you can build landing pages with it. You can build a lot of integrations and automations between different business applications. So yeah. I get where their fear comes from. But in the testing world, do you think that fear is warranted?
I've done lots of POCs of lots of different products, and I just haven't seen something that compares with a good automated tester yet. Like I said, I think one day it'll come along. I mean, look at WYSIWYGs. They haven't put software developers out of jobs yet because you can drag and drop and build nowadays using like Wix or, you know, what are some of the other ones that are really good? I only say Wix because I have a small website with them.
Squarespace, I think, is their competitor.
Yeah, Squarespace is a big competitor. Both of them, you can build amazing websites just drag and drop and stuff. It hasn't put developers out of jobs yet. Listen, we're in the technology business. It changes so fast. Like I can spend all day, every day studying and I still won't keep up on it. It's just, things are going to change. Like, don't be afraid of it. Embrace it. And if things change, find a different angle.
I like
it. So that's what you should be more focused on instead of being afraid of losing your job. Like, how can I make myself more employable?
Yeah. I mean, and yeah, I think even recently, I mean, I have this belief job security is an illusion. Way too many people put too much emphasis on that. But I mean, industry security and keeping up with technology is your security, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, if you're good at your job, people will come knocking on your door.
Yeah, exactly. I like it. Let's go ahead and wrap it up there. James, I do appreciate you doing this. And, you know, anyone in the comments, let us know what you thought for the YouTube video. If you're thinking about software engineering test, if you want to use that as a stepping stone, or you just really enjoy writing tests and this is what you want to focus on, let us know. But James, if people want to reach out to you and anything else you want to share, what would you like to share?
Yeah, if people want to reach out to me, I guess the best way would be through LinkedIn.
Okay. All right, I'll go ahead. Do you mind if I tag your LinkedIn in the description?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, cool. That's it. I do appreciate you coming on. Yeah, let us know what you thought. But James, seriously, stick around for a couple of minutes. But thanks so much.
Thank you, Don. I appreciate it.